tells you on the chart. You know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what I'm saying is I find a lot of, like, dyadic sociology when I'm trying to, like, flip it up to the triadic, because I say, okay, you got guppies and slacker. Okay, I live like a slacker, but do I really live as a slacker?
No.
And, right, and as a guppy, I have problems with them, but the things that they have or they want, I might
Well, you know, the chart is a picture of everybody in advanced society today. It's whatever. Scott is that. You're quadriphenic. I am everybody. And those memes are the standards that our culture brought to us. So you are all five quadrants. And that's why it was interesting to have you jump about in your posts of five-bodied. You were miming that out. But I think a lot of people thought that you didn't understand that you were doing that. They thought you believed in what you were saying.
That's because I'm not very well trained in grammar, just to put it bluntly. And I don't have the flow of, say, a person who's going to write out a narrative piece by piece. I just, rushes out of my hands.
Basically, you're oral.
Writer.
You're basically oral. You know, there's no grammatical errors in an oral society. Now, you're talking about quadriphenic living in a visual medium you read on five-bodied, but your style is speech rant. You're oralizing in type about your quadriphenic tactile experience.
Yeah. I took a couple of tests, and probably my worst subject was English.
Well, you can express yourself. I didn't know whether you wanted to do that on purpose or not, but you didn't put in your commas, and see, you need the commas in that if you're going to do prose, so you know what the emphasis is in a paragraph. Otherwise, you don't know which way the thinking is going. And when you read, you want to know which way it's going, so to get the point you're trying to make, because you were trying to make a point.
I guess what I did is I took for granted that other people were
high context
enough.
Yeah. You thought they were listening to you.
Right.
And hearing you. But it doesn't work. Now, I get criticized for putting in grammar, you know, punctuation. And that is what we call it, plodding in the email internet world. And, you know, the kids now don't even use syllables. So to do the grammar I did, I knew you would be irritated by it, and you did express irritation by it. But still, if you were trying to make a point, here I was being very precise in my grammar, and was I trying to make a point? Wasn't a normal point, and you were trying to make a point, but you weren't using the writing style to make a point. So it depends on your purpose, your intent, and the effect you want to make. So I gave you the benefit of the doubt and said, oh, okay, he's being blurry, because it is a blurred thing, and I agree with that. But you would react to people and categorize them as not implementing grammar properly. They were not using grammar properly. You would say non or agrammatically to them. You would say the Vancouverites were this or that, and that you weren't that. Very precise. You were being very emphatic in a phatic medium, which was funny. Okay, so you want to talk about this? What Ion says about sociology?
No, because I'm going to disagree. Because I'm very conservative. I'm reactionary conservative to the point of
disagree with what?
Okay, here's something
psychic.
I wanted to say earlier.
You already knew what I was going to say, and you knew you'd disagree with it. Okay. No, I do that with Ion a lot.
Sexuality. I don't think you have a very focused heterosexual conception, at least in the perspective of a bilateral, leaning right hemispheric male such as myself who thinks in utopian socialist terms.
Okay, what am I? I watch porn every day, jerk off every day.
If it feels good, do it. I've been doing that forever.
Well, you're doing what?
Is what I'm
doing
saying.
What?
I've been doing, if it feels good, do it.
Yeah,
like,
okay.
Do a cliche.
Categorize me. I'm telling you that I watch porn, jerk off every day. Now, what is that? Am I right hemisphere, left hemisphere, or what?
You're just in a transitory time right now, instead of acting upon that. Or you could, that could be the fetish in and of itself of just not wanting to engage in the actual thing. So that's fine,
no,
I guess.
I engage in sex, but I also use masturbation. I don't specialize in one or the other.
I mean sexuality and the types and how to focus as a manual for that audience that cares. I mean, I don't know how big your heterosexual male audience is. Maybe they have, there's like...
I don't know if I have an audience.
Well, we kind of do, almost.
What, you and Andrew, who are banned, let's see.
I don't know, probably 80 people come across it.
Okay,
maybe.
So who are these people? Do I hear from them? We just got a new member. Carry on, and I'll go down and I'll read you. Somebody decided to join Five Bodies, and it's interesting. I felt it might be appropriate to bring up, but I didn't know if we'd get this point. But who is my audience? What you're asking me to describe them?
We shouldn't do that because then that that will disharmonize Dobbstown, and then. But maybe that's a good thing because someone will attack me. And I'll get to have a rebuttal, maybe, part three.
Yeah, try it. Try to find my audience, even though I don't think I have one.
Okay, we got, like, a redhead who's a...
Oh, by the way, you know, Glow's back.
Okay, good.
He's been posting the past week, you know, ferociously. It's interesting. She doesn't say much, but something got her worked up, so if you go on there, you'll see it. Go ahead, what were you going to say?
So we got a redhead who...
Who's the
publisher? Oh, we know who's the publisher, and very
Jones.
Very into JFK. You know, like it's the impossible.
She doesn't look at Five Bodies. She just dropped off years ago.
I know she's too busy trying to figure out who killed JFK. You know,
and everything else. I mean, she's the editor of Paranoia, so she has to cover every thesis. She's like the guy doing the Oxford Dictionary.
She's like. I don't know. She's the atheist pantheist of the zero-point energy, like, scene, which is, like, internet culture paranoia. The zero-point.
No, she gardens in the summer. She doesn't like using the internet in the spring, summer.
Yeah, but she brings the zero with her into her gardening. It's in her mind.
Okay.
I mean, literally, she's like the Heideggerian, like, let's think about nirvana as in of itself, and, like, she's what we call the idealist ascetic Gnostic type of hating the physical world in itself as a type of evil, yet ironically caroling through life like a dialectical materialist, putting people into class distinctions while they're enjoying their privilege as a publisher.
Right.
The counterculturist who was there,
<That's>
you
right.
know,
well,
the 60s.
Yeah, she did accuse me of being a coward because I came to Hawaii.
Oh, you know what? Here's the funniest shit of all. I back in 2006 to like 2008-ish, before I went into my major patriarchal mood of just being self-satisfied and like the Crowley satanic sense, I was calling everyone a coward. I said, you know what, fuck the internet. Fuck, I was getting in Puritan mode. I was like, disgusting, pornography, all this fucking illegal shit going down. I was like, you know what we need to do? We need to like restart the fucking internet punk culture and just fucking hack websites down and fucking terrorize these fucking disgusting people, and started as a new kind of fucking punk counterculture, and just people get off their fucking asses and stop talking about conspiracy theories that they make profits off of, $5, you know, a week from, you know, Barnes & Noble's, and just say, you know what, get up, stand up, and fight.
Well, okay,
and
how'd that work out for you?
It didn't work because everyone's too cowardly to hack, because because hackers are treated worse than drug dealers, because they'll put you in jail for fucking 10 years even if you close down a fucking major media corporation that's, you know, basically dabbles in illegal pornography on the side, but you can't prove it, but you know it's true.
Okay.
And that's what my conspiracy theory was, and I kind of almost proved it, and it's like it goes on daily through, you know, Google subsidiaries and shit, and it's like, who wants to hack? No, we're all cowards. We're all, like, really talking about the evil patriarchy. If you want to fight the patriarchy in its most disgusting form, abuse the internet. Crash it. It's disgusting. It's actually a manifestation of the shadow of the Antichrist as a form of analogy, if you want to talk in Christian terms.
Yeah, do you know what speedrunning is or circuit bending is? Have you heard of
that? No, what's that?
Well, I'll get that in a second. Let me just read you the new member at Five Body. So I got this email forwarded to me after Sleeper got him in there, because it's hard to become a member. You got to go through Sleeper. You register, and then you think you're on, and it doesn't work, and then you ask me, and then I say, well, Sleeper, look at this, and then Sleeper puts you through. Well, this happened without me knowing it. Sleeper put the person through. Okay? So
okay.
I get this email. No, Sleeper forwards it to me. He goes, Bob Dobbs! Exclamation mark. Glad you finally reincarnated, man. Okay. He says, I just found out that Madman McLuhan taught at the University of Wisconsin. Hell yeah! Thanks for turning me on to him. I live in Madison, Wisconsin. I'm a chef and play lead guitar in a metal band here. Hence the, and he gives his handle. I found some of your YouTube clips while perusing Subgenius Junk on YouTube. Love the clips, especially the Zappa soundtrack ones. I've been a big Zappa fan since my brother turned me on to him when I was 11. I was a Subgenius in the late 90s, but find it pretty boring now. I figured I would contact you and let you know that I signed up on your Five Body site, but I still haven't gotten the confirmation email yet. And then Sleeper has now given it to him. Could you activate my account? I'm interested in learning more about the mystery body madness. Maybe the only hope for the chaos ahead? This is his question. I'm so-and-so, signed up a week ago. Oh, and what type of pipe tobacco do you smoke? Rock on. And he signs it. So here's someone who's going to get his world rocked when he gets into Five Body. It ain't what he expects. It ain't nothing that I can see here. And he will leave pretty quickly. And therefore, I will remain in the status of having no audience. How do you react to this enthusiasm?
Interesting. That's Wisconsin. I don't know. Let's just say that McLuhan, even though I have a lot of disagreements about that certain subset of the triadic quadrant of, say, if it feels good, do it, the analytical positivism, and et cetera, I will say that McLuhan's strong point is at least thinking the idea that there is a perceptual model that we have to work with, as opposed to the ecological point of view, which is our environment composed upon us. So he's thinking from an internal and an external perspective, and he's shifting through the sand. And that's what I think is going to be a new form of reinterpretation of Kuhn. Will probably bring back the hexatic interval to a slight degree, you know, just as we said, the Thompson retrieval from the Croker was a slight introduction to the Dobbs quadrant, because I think that's what we're looking for here, is the chance to be alone, the chance to be a part of a community, and the chance to divide between these two desires, because we're looking for ourselves, and at the same time, the ability to transcend ourselves, and then be comfortable with that is how we want to go towards that. And I think Wisconsin, I'm actually going to go towards Wisconsin after I leave Denver. And I think these plain places where we find ourselves overlooking are going to become more interesting as they're saying these dead bodies and this new energy coming in. I think it's because we're going to learn to approach reality from more essentialist perspective, and we're not going to start fixating on our pleasures and so on. So it's kind of like an ascetic kind of period in my life to go out there, because it's considered pretty uniform. But what's interesting is that there's a lot of stem cell research in Wisconsin, particularly Madison, and I think, you know, playing around with the chemical body would be interesting. So
okay. So I looked up, if you go to C-Theory, look up the article on game art, circuit bending, and speed running as counter practice. Then the subtitle is Hard and Soft Non-Existence, and it's about a certain kind of hacking. Now, have you heard of this book called The Exploit by Galloway and Eugene Thacker?
No.
Okay. It's a long article, but he starts off, in The Exploit, Alexander Galloway and Eugene Thacker speculate that, quote, future avant-garde practices will be those of non-existence, end of quote. This extraordinary claim is a response to the current ubiquity of digital technology and its impact on cultural politics. If existence becomes a question of being classified informatically, the avoidance of this classification or non-existence becomes of paramount importance. And that's what you're trying to do. Avoid that classification.
I'm doing both because, one, I want to benefit from the information, what I would call economy, because in this game, what we felt, the non-existence, which is somewhere between virtual and the counter-virtual of just saying counter-surveillance not being present, which would be a part of our internet identity since we're recorded everywhere. I want both ends. So in these internet game communities, we find, like, virtual currencies, and I think that's something that might be nurtured in the next couple of years as kind of like a black market currency, which would allow us to live outside these, you know, workaday jobs of, let's say, some hacker put up a blog or a pay-per-click robot or perhaps other ventures, and it's kind of done by itself. So we're starting to have our own money. We're starting to circulating our own value as opposed to back to the green paperback. So, and at the same time, non-existence is kind of like, if you want to delve into that shadow world, but I'm saying I want all of the above. I want to delve into the shadow. I want to be on the circuit, and then I want to break it.
That's what I understand is quadrophenia. You're exploring all parts of the chart. As everybody is like that, if they have the means to do it. So the article, I'll just read a couple of sentences at the beginning and then go down to something at the end. The discussion of non-existence in this book, The Exploit, opens with a question, one that forms the basis of this essay. Quote, how does one develop techniques and technologies to make oneself unaccounted for? Now, you would go in that direction, but not in that direction, plus two others. So as you read this article, you see he's really trying to dialecticalize, like the croakers, dialectic, turn into a dialectic, a quadrophenic situation. The person and what the guy's writing about is people being quadrophenics, and he doesn't know it. So the writer says, directly following this question comes a specific material example through which a crucial distinction between unaccounted for and invisible or absent is made. The use of a laser pointer aimed into a surveillance camera in order to blind it. In this situation, the camera is not destroyed, nor is the individual shining the laser actually hiding or invisible. Instead, they are simply not present on the particular screen or data set recorded by the camera in question. So then it goes into the three arts, something called game art, and circuit bending, and speed running. And there are technical things you'd have to read to get. And then it kind of ends with this. The manipulation of luck is much less obvious through watching the run documentation video. They're talking about a particular thing. But nonetheless, it's highly instructive in terms of the speedrunner's approach to gaming. Since games are played on a computer, which always produces the same output from a given input, many events which appear, even through long observation, to be random are actually predictable. As such, when seemingly random events such as the dropping of an item by a killed enemy occurs, it is always determined by a number of numeric variables drawn from the game's inputs and outputs. These variables could be the game clock, the pixel position of the player or non-player characters, the direction and speed of movement, or many others. Through examination of the assembly code alongside trial and error, it becomes possible for the runner to collect optimal items at all times and trigger most desirable enemy behavior, and trigger most desirable, i.e. least troublesome enemy behavior, allowing for a reduction of overall play time. So you get a little media ecology in there. So it says, in speed running, it is understood that beyond Kittler's comments and all software being reducible to hardware manipulation, all interface actions, that's what you're talking about, all interface actions are essentially hardware manipulation. This understanding allows for a creative undecidability between user and programmer that removes many of the obstacles posed by definable technical expertise. While the game is being clearly manipulated at the hardware level through a direct technical comprehension of the way in which it functions, resulting in often highly abrasive, glitchy, and distorted graphics and sound, alongside unintended gameplay elements, this manipulation is attained through no actual programming whatsoever at the conventional code-based level. So that's just a little glimpse there. I think you might find the article. You used to read a lot of C theory. This might be something you'd look at. It was published June 2nd, 2009. I think it's called Resetting Theory.
Now, if only we can have game networks that are actually proletarian social hacking networks of currency as opposed to a pseudo kind of description of that, of where, you know, you have Second Life, but gee, someone's paying $1,000 for some virtual property. Meanwhile, we can just make something out of thin air and just not tell the authorities about it. It's just the game. It's a running game, you know. That's what I should have done.
When should you have done that?
If I had the time to assemble programmers to create a social networking gaming site that creates virtual currency out of nowhere, and then we account for it, but at the same time, there's not really much work to be done for it.
But you didn't do it because you didn't know it.
Right. Well, I just didn't have the time. I don't have anyone who's willing to do the programming.
Mm.
The people want to get paid, so that's why I kind of look at left-brain females as my partners, women of principle. You know, female networking is more useful to me than some technologist who is looking to get recognized. Even though the conception, it will come. It definitely will come on its own accord. And
we didn't do the sociology, right?
Just a tad bit, not a lot, no.
So what would be Ion sociology? Ion definitely, no, he's libertarian, conservative, radical, socialist. That's what he is. It is, whatever Ion, zillions of entities. What would you do if you got Ion on your side?
On my side?
Yeah.
I'd try to create a world of general equality, general economic equality, a world of libertarianism to where we can hide from the state to a certain degree, and a certain world of conservatism where we look at the male and female as biological entities in themselves, as creating a unity as a whole. I don't really so much like this destruction of the family in itself as a unit, because I don't really see the counter as really productive. Now, I'm not saying productive in the East German Stasi conception of productive. If you don't show up to work, you're penalized and put in jail. I mean, just in the sense of productive, if you don't have the capacity to be a parent to anything, I don't really care about your custodial nature towards mankind. So I'm thinking about man and woman as a unitary whole, and equality needed, and the libertarianism as necessary for those right brain elements to hide in the shadow, if you will, to recreate the sense of equality and what the equality is geared towards. So an equality not based on egalitarianism, but based upon a flow, if you will, like a river that is basically the feeding trough, if you will, which is our initial opportunity, and then the rest will be left unto our own individual creativity. And so the conservatism is to actually actualize ourselves as biological organisms who were placed here in a nature before us, and then to continue on and not to separate, and to actually see ourselves as co-creators. And the radical aspect is to translate all of that dispersive energy, to translate it from any entity and to bring it into the center, which is what we call life. So basically, the radical is like, I want the beam, the tractor beam, that pulls out the souls from every dimension, from every seven levels of hell and every seven levels of heaven, and to translate it to wherever it needs to be, conscious, with memory, direction, and manifested in whatever plane it needs to be in, whether physical, astral, etc.
So how is that a criticism of me?
Because the conservative element is, after transfusing from a bisexual matriarchalist to a cosmopolitanist to just whatever goes, I've turned into a very heterosexual person, at least in the conception of my daily activities. Maybe psychologically speaking, I entertain the thoughts of non-heterosexual relations or philosophies or perceptions, but in the actual physical desire and desired engine of myself, I have become heterosexual, and I'm completely at ease with that.
Okay, so
and
where
I've
you are now,
maximized.
Let me just say, where you are now, those four categories, you did not live that, you think, consciously, until recently. You weren't any of that. You just arrived at this position.
Yeah.
After being a Mormon for a couple weeks.
Right. But I think even they have, I think I go way beyond them because I don't think they're aware of even how their own biological,
heterosexual. Oh, I meant that you dropped the Mormon. After a couple weeks, you dropped the Mormonism. You've now arrived at this point. You're not a Mormon.
Right.
So why should we take this position you have now seriously since you've been many positions or quadriphenic over the last 10 years?
Because it's evolutionary.
Yeah, but you might change into another position in 2 years.
Well, there's a difference between revolution and evolution. I think revolution is necessary. I mean, at least one part of my equation will require revolution because the imperialist entities need their inequality to survive. They profit off of us. So there will be a revolution. But my...
And
but
you mean by that, you mean the traditional Che Guevara takeover headquarters?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have to be like I'm going to have the, you know, the National Guard at my house because someone shot off some guns, but there will be a sense of resistance or at least a subversive propaganda that I will be letting loose. And I don't necessarily have to fear for that because I'm just asking for basic, common decency that is more common in Europe than our country. I mean, I'm not going to be considered, you know, a terrorist for what I'm going to do. But the point is, it will be revolutionary in the aspect of how people see themselves as participating in it and trying to recreate
it. No, it'll be evolutionary.
Well, no, that's not evolutionary. See, revolutionary is just changing the system, the social relations. Evolutionary, I mean actually physically, my proposition is evolutionary because...
That's what I'm saying. You're an evolutionary revolutionary.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're saying you have a little bit of a physical revolution, but the larger agenda is your evolutionary ideas of quadriphenia.
Yeah, which I see in our ability to bond as a species, as, you know, a parent between child, man and woman.
You don't see bonding happening now.
I don't. No, I don't. Not at all.
Right.
In fact, I mean, just for the sake, I'm going to say the most esteemed cultural that I have in Europe would be Macedonia, simply because they understand the meaning of bond.
How do you know that?
Well, because, simply because they are doing it, because they're at least showing by example that it's something to be sacred. So when I say about these Austrian riparian men having more sexual partners than anywhere else in the world, the problem is, even though by being the opposite side of the equation, even by being the right-brain male, you somewhat genetically create more left-brain females, the problem is in the social and the mental atmosphere which is being witnessed, they recreate your behavior. So what I'm saying is to have the optimum form of fidelity from your partner or your other. From a heterosexual perspective, you have to be bilateral, leaning right. So I'm now, I've already gone on the deep end on the right hemisphere, and that basically made me appear as a Neanderthal, which I actually still explore, because that has its own explorations that I'm continuing to explore. But just to keep things a little bit more cohesive, I'd say more of a bilateral, leaning right hemispheric, because if we act all chaotic out in the open towards our other, their double selves will start to emulate that, and then they are a chaotic element in themselves. So we have to retain a tiny bit of order within ourselves that we want to see in others. And I know that's kind of ironic coming from someone I've just spoke about a lot of Crowley, satanic, acosmic, left-hand, individualist-type libertarian ego just earlier. But in spite of that, because one is so aware, because one is so not only aware of the details and the bigger picture, that they have to know what needs to be done next. So there has to be recreated a sense of order within the self of how a man conceives of himself as what he is and how he is to relate to others. So my concerted aspect, I'm against prostitution, maybe I wouldn't be, say, against pornography because it's a little bit more mediated and abstracted from our daily perspective. But I, when I see prostitution, I think it also has its own manifestations in other forms of how we talk about what we see as value. Like, are we a culture of just, you know, out to have a good time and that's all normal and we don't see what damage that is? I mean, so yeah, I reintroduce a feudal aspect, that this feudalism, which requires an inner code, an inner discipline, that's actually, its sole purpose is to recreate discipline in the other.
I think
so.
I figured
it's a form
it out,
of courtship.
Kiggy, I think I figured it out. You're describing quadrophenia, and that takes place in the corpus callosum. And that's the evolutionary revolution you advocate. You want people to be able to live with that. Bit of chaos,
yeah, but here's
order.
The thing. Here's the
but
difference.
No, let me just finish that point. So then I'm saying, since you go on about right hemisphere, left hemisphere, this and that, that's your program for those that cannot live or recognize the quadrophenic selves they are. So you've got two audiences for yourself. You've got those that can understand the Bob stuff, and you're with them. But for those that can't, you've got a more mundane agenda of the right hemisphere versus the left hemisphere and the permutations.
And also uniting, because, as I said, it's male and female, and I'm not going to see it as separate, because the sexual union represents the procreation, which represents the life, which represents the future, which represents the symbol of our evolutionary creation. So that's why I'm saying about the inner discipline that is required, that one would want out of their other to be also within themselves. So that's where it unites, because it's a little bit past verses. I mean, I did a lot of verses,
yeah,
in most of this speech, but where I'm trying to unite this and then beyond
verses, that's S is the 19th letter, V is the 22nd, 1922, my birth date. So you did a lot of 1922 stuff.
Yeah, so beyond the verses, I'm talking about the actual evolution of where the order is actually hardwired in us, so to speak. So you can't really be versus on that level, because there won't be as much resistance as we've seen. So
yeah, we're already bonded. Like, you're trying to get people to recognize they're already bonded.
Right. And so what comes after being bond?
Yeah.
Fidelity, which is why I resonate with number 7 on fidelity as opposed to 6. 6 is like, okay, we bonded, we fused first and second nature, now what?
Right.
Now you express that overcoming of the limitations of, say, mortal life in the Hyksatic. So you're immortal, now what? Now, does that mean you should be worshipped in and of it itself because you're immortal, or what are you going to do with that immortality? So the fidelity is, why do we stay together after the fact of, okay, so whether our bodies are designed for it or not. And so we're going to look at it from both ends. We're going to look at it from, yes, it's evolutionary, physically instilled, and at the same time, what impels us to be bonded in spite of those physical preconditions.
Well, aren't I your poster boy then, having been with Connie for over 40 years?
Yeah, but I think Hindus are a good poster boy too, and Macedonians. I mean, just for mortal people who are not as highly as evolved as you. And I don't know, I feel like I might developing a Connie in my life too. She's a med student, and she's been around for a couple of years, so I don't
And she's on your web? On your
yeah, my cult.
Your cult.
My sisterhood.
And what ideas do you communicate that attract her?
Probably my mind, because she has a mind of her own, which is odd, because usually submissive types don't probably get too involved in that realm, especially the psychological realm, because that's more self-reflective. I mean, you got the religious, the political, and the psychological, and that is like the gradation between left hemispheric woman to right hemispheric woman. So the psychological woman's going to be very, you know, cynical and also very skeptical, which is rightfully so, because we need to, as the operator myself, I need to be skeptical of myself because I need to see my failures. So, I mean, she has a mind, and she has somewhat of a submissive personality, but also she could see things in the sense of the future. So I guess she's more future-oriented than past-oriented, although she's very sentimental. So, and so that's what I'm saying. The present aspect is a masculine aspect. The present is masculine. And so you were right to say about, you know, McLuhan was saying, when we're in this discarnate state, we're kind of frozen by the apprehension of future coming to us, and that kind of paralyzes us. And it says, in spite of that paralysis, there is a paralysis far worse, and that is discarnate reality in reverse, which is that we see ourselves only valuing and remembering the past of being separate, discarnately. So,
okay,
like
so,
saying,
so yeah.
How do you? How do
hold
you?
It,
sustain?
Hold it. Let's just determine this. McLuhan, what you were trying to say is McLuhan saying we become obsessed with the destination syndrome in the discarnate state. You're saying that we also become obsessed with the past.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know
that's true.
Becoming less apparent because, yeah, it's true. We're becoming less grammatical. We're reading less classics. We're flipping through channels in right brain mode. But even in that aspect, we're still with our own personal hang-ups about our own past or how we see ourselves translating from the past to the present. And so I think that's what the culture is being very sped up. And so even though we don't have the normal conception of the past, I'm talking about each individual's personal past as being summed up in the present. And then you have people doing things out of impulsivity or doing things out of feelings as opposed to feelings and ideas and the will, spirit, and a much deeper heart that goes beyond mere universal love. So the universal love is what my sisterhood is composed of, but beyond the universal conception is the higher love, which is something where the I is transposed of, like, above the mind and the heart. And what I'm saying here is I'm trying to also replicate myself within this sisterhood. So they have a certain sense of consciousness to adapt to the environment, you know, but it's a sisterhood because without the equality, it would hardly sustain itself, and that's the genetic line that most mammal species seem to go through, and that seems to be on the general path correct. I mean, females with narrow hips tend to have less intelligent children, and mothers with narrow hips tend to be more testosterone imbibed, and it's a simple fact, the jealous are less faithful. I'm sorry to say that. Well, there may be some few alterations in society that where the very jealous are very faithful, but for a general conception, the jealous are unfaithful. And so that's why I cannot relate to the postmodernist ecological mindset, because that's where they fail to understand. The jealous are the unfaithful. And so the jealousy of, you know, what I have as a right hemispheric male compared to what they're imbibing through is that to not make the jealousy, to disappear it, that to see this unity and an asymmetrical whole that may be divided between me and the sisterhood, but is constantly translating as a conscious entity, which is fully aware of itself. And I can't have just all proletarian females, you know, who are just, you know, workers or lab workers in front of a computer screen, probably running scans on genetic sequences or, you know, physics models. I'd also have to see it from that eventually, because of the necessity of the vicissitude of the environment and the demands of our society, that I'd have to actually train or, so to speak, encourage a certain sense of individuality and a death instinct even within my sisterhood, but ever so lightly so, ever so delicately, in a disciplined manner, but to create actual individuals who are powerful and very extremely intelligent and super conscious. which is all that, going through all that process is a very difficult and fragile reality. But, you know, we're not getting out of this world through narrow hips and jealousy, is what I'm saying. And if we would like to go the other way, to go into the zero, which was, like, you know, of nirvana, which would be Buddha, who I highly detest, on the sense of the idea of what I'm trying to approach.
Ion would agree with you on that.
Because Buddha left his family at the age of 29, which is, I don't know, some weird synchronicity in my life that the love of my life died on the 29th, so I have a disgust towards 29 and the lunar cycles. And so this zero that appears on the mountain, which is this polyandric experience, like there's lots of polyandry in the Western Himalayas, and so we just vanish into this mada to expect, oh, we're going to go through it to an aesthetic sense, and we're just going to abandon our this disillusion, this maya. But that's more of a Gnostic end. And I'm like, no, I think the maya is that you left your children. That is the maya, Buddha. The maya is that you had the arrogance of a prince to come down and condescend to us and yet tell us to reach nothing. All I tell my sisterhood is about the idea of fighting death, resurrection, life, and keeping on to the left. I don't encourage this suicidal emo slit your wrist culture. I think it's disgusting. I think it's the most depraved act of violence against the heterosexual male and the heterosexual female to contort people's emotions like that and their psychology to where they're completely lost, to fall in a false sense of sentimentality. I only try to recreate the idea of fighting life. I mean, fighting life's limitations and just creating the sense of immortality in the flesh. So that's what I try to tell them. We're here to live. We're here to conquer death. And that's what I try to instill in my sisterhood. And if that makes me a bad person, then, oh, well, I guess I'm just another propagandist, because I didn't just give them Christianity to go tell them to go die, and I didn't give them Buddhism to sit on their ass and just be self-complacent with themselves. So I don't know. So it's like a mixture of like the proletariat and the cosmic mindset. But
well, isn't it a mixture of the elements on my chart? You don't have to give them LaRouche, but LaRouche represents the meme of that. What was that? God, and McLuhan was the sex quadrant. Thompson was politics, and Kroger was consciousness. So you want to subtly give them a bit of everything, or of this and that. That's what the chart recommends, including the spiraling between them. That's the Dobbs quadrant. So I don't see how you're doing anything that the chart represents the opposite of. And on top of that, you're tuned right into the Ion philosophy. You're saying exactly what Ion says. So we start off trying to critique Bob. So all that critique of me was based on the old Kigyi, who did not understand what the present Kigyi understands. Correct?
For the most part. I'm starting to agree with you, oddly.
Right.
For the most part. But I'm trying to make a little tiny dents here and there, little details.
Well, that's the self-critical environment that I encourage. I mean, we wouldn't want to think like me. You know, we
I'd say LaRouche is more left hemispheric than what entity I'm approaching, at least in itself and his own, which is funny because all he talks is about, you know, geometry, subsuming algebra, and so on. But
yeah, your attempt to be different from LaRouche in that quadrant was that algebraic personality you announced in Alt Slack.
Right.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, even in my whole statistical biological studies about neurochemistry and how it affects women and so on, even in then, I look on, like, another, you know, construct that can affect over that, you know? Like, I'm very diverse. Like, my selection of women, they may have certain kind of, like, unity that I instill in them, but they come from all walks of life, and I don't see any disharmony in that, oddly. I mean, the Nazis would, and see, the Nazis, as far as the five great violent social memes of that were expressed on your quadrant, with the Nazis in LaRouche, the Freemasons in Thompson, the Jesuits in McLuhan, the Bolsheviks in Kroker, and the Mossad in the Patatic level,
yeah,
at least on the idea of these extremely social-political movements that you know, as a very strong meme of the 20th century. I would say the thing with the Nazis were is that their men were more left hemispheric, and that I'm definitely in a state that's beyond the monadic, because I'm instilling something that may appear very Rai-like in the sense of the mental body being instilled in one centralized area. But where I'm coming to select from, it's a lot more wide. It's. But I'll say in spite of that, as far as those cultural memes, the three first transhumanist cultures, at least how we can translate into our basic understanding of the 20th century, they're not authentically transhumanist, but as far as we knew of the 20th century, were Nazi Germany, the Soviet Union, and the State of Israel, which were in a constant, I mean, even if they were based upon pseudoscience or mostly sociological ideas, and they all have very tainted histories with lots of violence and tragedy and evil, hypocrisy, whatever you want to call it. But the funny thing is today, presently speaking, of those three countries, at least of the afterimage of what was left after them, I mean, that is really not so much an expression of the inner environment of who they were, but how the outside world reacted to them and what they became. Germany has the most income equality, so therefore I highly disagree with certain aspects of the Kroker quadrant, which would represent the Soviet Union, and the ecological green type personal kibbutz, separate, you know, chosen society of, say, what we know as the State of Israel. But of course Germany is not Nazi Germany today, so obviously so there you go. So they're becoming more self-aware. I mean, you did tell me that Germany in the 1990s was like a general expression of the pentatic cultural meme, if
yeah,
you say to analogy with the Japanese in the 70s,
they were tactile. Every big chunks of the enemies of America in the 20th century are tactile cultures. Different kinds of tactility. Russia, the communists, and then later Japanese, and yes, Germany in the 90s. Different tactile cultures. Americans have a problem with tactility, even though they create the technology that makes everybody become quadriphenically tactile.
Well, basically, I'm staying in Wisconsin or Idaho until I transport to Canada or Europe when I'm 28, as I said before. So,
okay, so let's map libertarian, socialist, radical, conservative on the chart.
Yeah.
Who's libertarian?
From who? Kroker to an aspect, but he gets lost in its own...
Right. Well, let's say, okay, on the simple level, Kroker's socialist, LaRouche's libertarian, McLuhan's, what's the radical, and what was the other one?
Well, we have conservative, libertarian, socialist, and radical. So you could say radical would kind
of
border between Kroker. I'd say radical would border between Kroker and Dobbs, and conservative would lap between LaRouche and McLuhan. And socialist would...
Thompson and Kroker?
Yeah,
and
to
then,
a general degree.
And then we're left with libertarian, which is maybe McLuhan and LaRouche?
McLuhan and Kroker. Yeah.
Okay, so, okay, now the Kingi position is slipping and sliding in among them all, depending on who you're addressing and what situation you're up against. Isn't that the juggling of quadriphenia? Like, you're a libertarian in relation to certain themes, and then you're conservative in relation to other themes.
Yeah, I like to read a lot of literature about just before the wall fell down in Berlin, about how East Germans were going past the wall and coming back to the West and then back to the East and living these double lives and not finding themselves completely reconciliated, like running away from one terror to the next.
Mm. Any good movies on that?
I know a good book.
What's that?
It's called Führer X. It's Memoirs of a Neo-Nazi, actually.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty good. It was in the early 90s. I mean, it basically tells the story of how an East German who lived in you know, a communist society, was always told to be anti-fascist, who grew up to be quite racist, reactionary, and nationalistic, and he saw them that self as a form of rebellion against the oppressive state. And then he came to the West, he lived that out, and it shows him as being a street fighter, an anarchist, living in squats. And then it shows how his mind unravels into where he finally understands the absurdity of his neo-Nazi life, and so he reforms. And it's actually pretty interesting, because
what happens when it reforms?
Different cultural norms going throughout this person's mind, and the people who he's against, or who is he identifying with, or, you know, just how anyone could become anything and then possibly just slip out of that because, you know,
that's the point in the multiple experiences.
Yeah, so that would be like what I am. So, like, I came from a LaRouche aspect, so I probably had a lot of that OCD kind of objectivist, you know, outward appearance to people, but then I started to notice these contrasts, so I just slipped out of that. So,
well, what did this person become when you say he reformed?
Well, he started to make speeches about how he became entranced to life himself, and he explains how it happens sociologically and psychologically. And so his former neo-Nazis tried to murder him several times, sent letter bombs to him, and it shows how he had to protect his family and so on. So I think it's like a person in refuge, like a person who...
He's exiled.
You know,
he's an exile.
Yeah, he's an exile, and then...
Now, that's what we all are.
Something entirely different, yeah.
There's been... somebody pointed out that the popular literature of the last 30 years always had exile themes. And, you know, Joyce did a play called Exiles. If you bring in the four body, it gets more precise about what's exiled. But you express exile sensibility, and most people feel they're exiled from different things, and they're looking to bond with something on some level. So the bonding is an obsession, not only the destination syndrome and the past. Oh, on the past point, Rouge will never beat the Queen because the Britons will look to the past as an obsession under discarnate conditions, right? So the Queen stays as a reflex of this effect where people are obsessed with the past. So what is the obsession with bonding?
Our obsession and the whole general culture, or us?
Yeah. You're advocating bonding, but I think bonding is a big issue all over the place because we live in a disconnected intelligence.
Right.
You know,
but I'm saying bonding is kind of like where we see identity involved. And identity is how we see ourselves, our inner ego, when we look in the mirror and we talk to ourselves. So we may find that identity expressed in people that we know and that bonds us together. So supposedly it's reaching the deepest part of our being to where we see ourselves, and so we choose to attach to another and bond in that. Or our identity to just how they relate to us and how they see us is the bond. But
isn't that what you see in Obama?
About bonds?
Yeah, Obama is an image of bonding, the desire for bonding.
Yeah, I mean, we're all kind of trying to get in each other's, you know, feel like we lived each other's life and identify with that, or see our lives as being cooperating as some kind of whole. But it's all about identity, and it's all about just things that are personality oriented.
Well, with identity, you can mix it up. And you can
Can. I mean, it is a little bit post-pentatic in a certain sense.
It's a way of creating contrast.
Yeah, yeah. It's a little bit beyond the solemn, retracted, green, ecological, you know, closed environment of the pentatic situation, which shuts off the grid and just shuts the door. It's bonding also is a willingness to walk out of one's house and then try to see someone else's house as their own, as being apart and circulating around. So yeah, it's a little bit, it's a bit post-pentatic, the bonding situation, the identity switching.
Right, so the...
Because my other book I had here is called Race Traitor, which is a book written by Jewish writers that talk about basically Israel's hypocrisy. And it's just saying how all these people are against each other, but if they just found each other as serving the same purpose, like if the Russian immigrants would bond with the Palestinians, they can find themselves gaining more civil rights, you know. Meanwhile, they're being manipulated by people who are not giving them...
By identity politics.
Right. So you should switch identities.
Right. Now, that's a quadriphenia. Now, let me just respond to that, because that's what I was going to...
And relate identities.
McLuhan talked about how new technologies always create an identity crisis for the cultures that experience a new technology. It's a different situation today. The question is whether you can even have an identity, or whether it would even be bonded long enough to have some kind of survivor.
I have an identity, not that I particularly...
Yeah, but could you communicate it? Yeah, you walk up to somebody, I'm a libertarian socialist radical.
Yeah, like, who wants to listen to that and process it? So if you're talking about identity as how it's communicated, then other people label you as how you saw yourself. Yeah, of course, we're not going to be able to spill out our whole internal world to someone else and just say, oh, they got us. Of course not. So we don't have identity in that sense, because we're kept on being filled and filled with more and more as the situation is constantly changing, to by the time they get to some aspect they knew about us, it's too late and we're already onto some other algorithm. So, yeah, we don't have identity in that sense. But
and we're trying to decide whether we can handle that. How long can we float with no identity?
That's why I think we need more telepathy and more women who are more engaged in the language arts.
And as
I think they're being,
well,
I think they're being divorced from that.
Yeah, that's why you should support our Melting Titanium Radio Show. We do an ESP show. We develop people's ESP. You have to have ESP to listen. You know about that, the Tuesday show with Ion?
Mm-hmm.
Melting Titanium. So we're coincident with your desire to enhance more ESP. But what is the content of ESP? What are we picking up? You know, what is, since nothing's stable, what are we ESPing about? So then it becomes the TV body is the ESP, the consensus about, yeah, we have a president, it's Obama, and he's a great man, and we can all ESP about that. We can share that. We don't live it, but we can nostalgically, this is the phrase, cloning ESP.
Cloning ESP, that would be very useful to my organization.
Well, take my essay on it and post it on your site and say, this is the Bible, and I explain cloning ESP. Have you ever seen that essay?
Oh, yeah, I read through some of it, yeah.
Yeah. Cloning ESP is the rearview mirror stance in a world where there's only, at best, voluntary ESP, and even that isn't very lengthy. We are getting used to being disconnected.
I'm trying to create involuntary ESP.
Yes.
Because I'm the conductor here.
Yes, satellite conductor. Satellite conductor, virtually replayed, holopathically. So, you're a fine example of the average citizen today. Nothing wrong with being average. We're all average in some of our bodies. You know, you can't be anything but average in the TV and the chip body.
The TV and the chip body?
Yeah, it's even silly to say average. But anyways, you're a fine representative of quadriphenia, the average, the common condition of a big part of industrial, post-industrial and advanced collapsed life, post-apocalyptic life. You know, if there's all these secrets that are revealed in the apocalypse, then there's still information. But if there are no more secrets, then there's no information, so it's post-apocalyptic.
Hmm. And so...
identity becomes phatic, and you can and you can be phatic with all kinds of bodies and people.
Probably like a mark.
Yes, like a mark.
Yeah.
Not the mark of the beast, but like a mark.
I know, but we could. It's still something analogous to some reality that we're probably approaching.
So we're past
and so on, but
beg your pardon?
Something we'll probably have to. I don't know. Probably just we're already in the mark right now.
Right. So what concepts do you tease your fans with?
My fans?
Yeah, and your cult.
Just neurology papers, philosophy papers,
biochemistry.
So it's your choice.
Brainwaves. Yeah, it's a programmed environment.
Yes, programmed environment. I've been one of those for a long time. So
yeah.
So you have started a new holopathic Bob church.
Yeah, it's neurorealism.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Or at least neuroprogramming, linguistically.
And it attracts all kinds of girls.
Yeah. Yeah, med students, law students.
How do they find out about you?
I have way too much time on my hand.
Mm-hmm. And so do you invade people's areas and notify them of your existence? You know, virtually invade
people. I'm pretty quick. I'm pretty, like, a series of questions very rapidly, and then I'm over. And then I just, if I don't have a feeling for it, I'm on to the next. You know, that's like a simple principle they tell you in approaching people. You know, if you don't succeed, try again. So the thing is to throw many darts. Don't throw one dart.
And right. So
instinctually, you start to adjust to that.
Yeah, so I think you used to post a lot of my stuff on alt Discordia, alt religion, alt science, all over the place, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you do with your stuff. You go into a lot of different chat forms, whatever they're called, and drop your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then see who comes over.
Yeah.
That's, that is way beyond Quadrophenia in terms of, that's social, virtual promiscuity, metaphysical promiscuity.
That's my kibbutz.
right. Yeah. And Quadrophenia is a simple model to fall back on, because you're way more than, anybody is way more than Quadrophenia, if you actually tabulate how much you interact with. But
they're eternal.
Yeah.
Every one of them is eternal.
Yeah, so is eternal?
They're all eternal. We are all eternal. So.
Yeah. So then this model is libertarian. My chart is libertarian, conservative, radical, socialist.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I picked the people of the time, you know, 30, 25 years ago, who had a certain role. Because remember, McLuhan danced on the toes of the Catholics. Croker danced on the toes of the Pomos. LaRouche danced on the toes of the scientists. And Thompson danced on the toes of the mystics. Each was a Rumpelstiltskin in their own. And then each had their own sub-Rumpelstiltskins that they would hoik up, just like I hoiked them up. And then I hoiked up the fact that various media, radio, TV, computer, satellite, were miming those various things. So is radio libertarian? Is computer libertarian? Computer is libertarian.
Yeah, well, computer is definitely libertarian.
Yeah. So radio is maybe socialist.
Yeah.
TV is conservative. And satellite would be radical.
Yeah, new planet.
Yeah. So, you know, I talk about the Android meme imitating anthropomorphic humans, simulating the quadrophenic state. And then that collapsed in the breakthrough of the last year or so into something we can call hexatic, septatic, whatever. It's pretty hard to chart where it is. But a lot of strange phenomena will manifest. And the four previous quadrants won't be able to categorize it in their terms, which is what you seem to be trying to say.
Well, I guess I'm just performing a little socio-psychological ecology.
Just a little.
Which is what, you know, any businessman is really performing when we're offering something.
You're trying to bond with an audience, and then hopefully an audience that can pay you.
And possibly, I don't know, instilling fidelity.
Yes, and that's a tough thing to find today.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so very good. Congratulations, you passed. You're my first PhD student. And you've done your oral, and you've done well. On to make your own A cult.
Right, which is right below genetic engineering, which is where we're going next.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is a good place to start in Madison, Wisconsin. Lots of biosciences there.
Do you remember those other categories? I had CIA, X-Files, genetic engineering, archetype.
Well, after genetic engineering is Who's Forgotten Furry Lent, which is like the whole meteorological, sociological, psychological, rotation or whatever that looks in rearview mirror at the cults and genetic engineering and et cetera.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. See, McLuhan was CIA, Thompson was X-Files, Croker was genetic engineering, Dobbs was archetype, and what was LaRouche? Forget what that first category is. NASA, N-A-S-A, right, NASA. So, you know, we have the rotating of NASA, CIA, X-Files, which is sort of mystery landscape stuff, and genetic engineering and archetype. That's the parallel to the five bodies.
Excellent. So I think I'm possibly at personal club right now, which is just a bit past cosmic awareness.
Right.
Just because you bring cosmic awareness to me. You bring Ion to me. So, and then I'm starting my club.
Yeah, do you regret not visiting Worcester?
I do, because he's very nice, and he kind of made me feel good. He had kind of like a way of... I felt like I was in the guff with him. I don't know.
very congenial person. Right? Congenial?
Right, and I definitely liked his kind of geometrical explanation of things, because it just evolved from, like, one crystal. He explained how Re was one structure, and then it divided, and something else happened, and...
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting that I look back at it, because it just kind of shows me like a sense of order in some sense.
So, you know, when you get some money, give him a call.
Okay.
Always late at night, best time to call. You know, West Coast time.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think that's it.
Okay.
Let's see if Scott has a question or a statement. You might take a second to have to plug in.
Hello?
Yeah, Scott.
Yeah, you can hear me okay?
Yep.
I don't. I usually, you know, this is kind of embarrassing. I usually think along. And I found myself wanting to just soak in this conversation and not really participate.
Yeah, we turned you into an undead person, couldn't form a thought.
Yeah.
You know, there's a benefit of putting people to sleep, at least my sisterhood. People who stay up late tend to be more right hemispheric, and they start to self-reflect. Putting them to bed early keeps them in the routine, right? So it's funny, because sleeping is supposed to be media ecology, because we shut it off, but once we go to sleep... We might have to wake up to what's in front of us. Sleeping.
Did you know that's what we used to say on the radio show in CKLN 20 years ago?
Yeah. We put you to sleep.
We're here to drive you to sleep.
Drive, yeah. Death drive, destined.
Okay, very good. All right, I think we'll end.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Kiki.
Thank you.
Maybe we'll continue. We'll see what happens in the resonant interval, whether we'll have a third part or not.
Okay.
And it also depends on where you are.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. That's it, Scott.